Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Traditionally, refreshable Braille displays have been pretty costly for individuals to purchase. But today, we'll be talking about a new design concept from the American Printing House for the Blind that has a dramatically lower price point than most other displays.
We'll speak with Ken Perry, a blind engineer and project lead on the Orbit Reader 20, about the device, its functions, and how they achieved this low-cost design. But first for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Ken Perry, as prompted by a question from us. What advice do you have for our listeners that you'd like to share as a tip?
Well, don't always believe what you're told. I've been blind for 25 years, and when I originally went blind, they told me that electronics was banned from, you know, blind people because you had to be able to see the resistors, you had to be able to see what you were doing. And now in this new world of Arduino boards and makers movement, where people actually make stuff out of old toasters and whatever they can get their hands on, blind people are right up there and low vision in developing hardware. I am currently working on a science project at APH, and I'm the one that's actually designing the hardware probe. And that's a Bluetooth light probe. And, you know, that's been kind of nice to actually be able to get back into electronics. So just because you've lost your sight, if you just recently lost it or something, doesn't mean that the things you used to do are now not possible. I do all my own woodworking and all my own electronics. So I think the big thing is, if it's something you really want to do, there's usually a way to get to it.
And that's one of the things that we try to convey on this show, not infrequently. We do several varieties of topics. And one of them is talking with blind people who've figured out how to do whatever it is. And it's anything from extreme sports to hobbies to jobs to whatever. And it's a good bet that if there's something that you as a blind person want to do, somebody else has already figured out how to make that doable. And so we like to tell those stories so that it encourages people to get back into doing things that they used to like to do.
Oh, yeah. And there's always stuff out there that makes it easier. I mean, there's tools. Sometimes you have to hunt them out, but there's tools that help you on woodworking. There's tools that help you in electronics. There's some things that people call a toy that actually turns out to be, you know, a highly useful tool. I found at a maker's fair, you guys can look those up, but they're in every city at least once a year. But I found a Play-Doh set that teaches electronics. And a lot of people, including myself, don't know that Play-Doh is conductive. So don't stick it in your wall socket. But I mean, the point was that a blind child could start learning electronics at a young age because Play-Doh and small batteries, they're not dangerous. They're something fun you could play with. And you can make buzzers and all kinds of things work. So I enjoy looking for those things that actually can make the inaccessible accessible.
And in next week's episode, we'll be talking a lot more about how the visually impaired can do their own hardware and electronics projects.
Let's start by meeting Ken Perry and learning about what he's done at APH.
My name's Ken Perry. I work in the technical product research development department of the American Printing House. The American Printing House is a company that serves blind in the United States. It's one of the largest service providers of Braille and devices in the United States. It's definitely one of the oldest. We've been around over 150 years. I don't think people realize how long APH has been doing stuff, but I can tell you that it only closed once, and that was during the Civil War. So we've definitely been around a while.
And how long have you actually been working there?
I've been working there now 8, going on 9 years.
Many of our listeners have visual impairments. Do you?
Yes, I'm 100% blind. I lost my sight while I was in the military. And when I got out of rehab, they asked me what I wanted to do. They wanted me to become a lawyer or psychologist or something, going to college for that. And I said, no, I think I want to stick kind of with what I did in the military, which was electronics. And they said, well, you know, you can't do that as a blind guy. So I picked software engineering and went back to school for that. Got a bachelor's in software engineering. And now I'm trying to get back into electronics now that it's more accessible. So there's a lot of stuff I'm still doing.
I would imagine that APH is more supportive of your effort to do hardware electronics than any other organization that's not focused on empowering blind people to do whatever they want to do.
Well, you know, APH is great because they do give us a lot of freedom on what we work on. So we have a lot of choice and we can, you know, pick the projects. I've worked on everything from Nearby Explorer on Android, the Braille Plus 18. Now I'm working on this product that we're talking about today, the Orbit Reader 20, as more of a project leader on this than a software engineer. But the software engineer portion and the electronics that I had in the military actually helped me, you know, when I'm talking to the contractor, which is Venkatesh Chari with Orbit Research, on, you know, different features that we want, because it's nice to understand how the underlying device actually works to actually help the contractors.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is the Orbit Reader 20 portable Braille display.
Today we wanted to talk mostly about the Orbit Reader 20, which is newly available from APH. Can you give us a summary of what the device is about?
Really, the Orbit Reader 20 came from a project called Transforming Braille. And if you go online, you can still find the webpage at www.transformingbraille.org. And it's a project where actually 10 different agencies and came together to make a low price Braille display that could be used worldwide. A lot of countries can't afford these $2,000-$3,000 devices. Now, this is not a, you know, Cadillac Braille display like you would find today, but it is a groundbreaking Braille display in that it has new type of Braille that calling signage level Braille. So if you feel those metal signs or the plastic signs in an elevator or something where they're really solid Braille, this has that kind of feel, and it's much more easy to read for those of us getting started with Braille, but it's also really easy to read for people who have been reading Braille for a long time, because you don't have to press as hard and you can just kind of coast over the letters. And it's something that the Braille can actually stay up without even power applied. So the Braille doesn't cost any power to run and it's very rigid.
What was the driving philosophy behind the device?
The goal was to build a reader where people could get content and actually carry it around, sort of like an Amazon tablet. You could keep all your content on a SD card. So you can keep up to 32 gig of content on here, which is quite a lot of Braille, and you can carry it around with you and read it anytime you like. It works as a reader, and it also connects to iPhone, Android, Windows, just, you know, the basic, just like any other Braille display. The difference is it does have the SD card, and it also has another feature that we just recently added. It wasn't really planned to be put in, but it's a very simple editor as well. So you can use it as a note taker, a very simple note taker. It doesn't have formatting and stuff, but really, you know, a lot of the time you just want to take a list or edit some phone numbers, and this really makes that easy.
It seems to me that an inexpensive Braille display has been kind of the holy grail of access technology. Can you describe what you do differently that makes this less expensive than the traditional Braille displays?
Well, I think there's two main things. Orbit Research, the company that has actually engineering the device, they're the guys that built the Orion TI-84 talking graphic calculator, and they're also the new Orion TI-30 calculator. When they came to us, they said, hey, we have an idea for some new Braille cells, and we're going to use off-the-shelf internals to make these cells. That's the big thing. It's off-the-shelf type parts to make the actual actuators. It's a much less expensive Braille display because the parts are less expensive. The second thing they did is, with all the companies that came together, a lot of money was able to be put into the development and thus offset the cost of the end product. So when you have 10 companies putting a lot of money into something, they can actually get something built. And so that made the device cheaper.
Can you describe the device physically?
Yeah, sure. It is 6.5 inches from side to side, and is 4.5 inches from front to back. And then it is 1 inch and a little bit high when it's resting on the table. On the top, it has what you're used to as a Perkins-style keyboard. And in between the Perkins-style keyboard with the space and the keys, there's a cursor pad. And then to the front of the device, there is 20 cells. On both sides of the front of the device, they're rocker keys. So you have a front and a back key on each panning key. And then you have, of course, a button to the left of the space and a button to the right of space. And that's really it. Now, on the back, there is a power button, a full-size SD card slot, and then a USB micro B port. And that's about the whole device. One thing to mention, there are no cursor router keys. This is one of the things that was left out in the building of it to keep the price down. And because it originally was designed as a reader unit, not a full-fledged Braille display, it was made to be for reading. When you're reading, you really don't need the cursor router keys. Now, what we found is using it without cursor keys is really not that hard, even when you're hooking it to your iPhone or, let's say, JAWS. It may be missing a couple shortcut keys, but what we've done is made shortcut keys to take over for them.
Interestingly enough, although the routing keys are useful on a Braille display, they're certainly not necessary. When you think of using a regular QWERTY keyboard with a computer, you don't have such functions like cursor routing keys, and you just navigate using the arrows and control keys. So if you're hooking this up to a computer or another device, that kind of routing works fine.
Right.
In the list of features, it says it contains 8 Braille input keys and a spacebar. And in the photograph that's higher up on your website, it shows 6 Braille input keys. So are there 6 or 8?
There are 6 the way you would see them, but you can also use 7 and 8. So we call 7 and 8 the 2 on the left and the right of the space bar.
Okay.
So if you're typing and you're in a language, again, this was meant to be a multinational device. And one of the cool features is you can actually put a language table on the SD card, and then your menus then become whatever somebody has set up. So if they have a Spanish language table, all the menus and everything become Spanish. So let's say you had a language that needed all 8 keys, they could use it. Now, currently, we use the 7 and 8 as things like backspace or enter, you know, and things of that sort. But it could definitely be used as a 8-key entry.
So you talked about not having the navigation keys for the Braille cells on top, but you said that you added some extra shortcut keys. Can you describe what some of those are and how those functions work?
Actually, I wish I could. There is a couple keys with, let's say, JAWS that they use router keys for. We're currently still adding those, but they are being added. So the short answer is, I don't know what they're going to be, but they will be in before the device comes out.
So one should read the documentation as usual.
Yeah, that's. I'm really hoping, because of the way this device is designed, you don't have to do a lot of documentation reading. We have made sure to use some of the old key navigation keys that people are used to, for instance, on the Braille and Speak. So let's say you wanted to go up a line in the reader, space.1 actually goes up and space.4 goes down. But you can also use the up and arrow, down arrow keys. So, you know, we've tried to make it so those who have used Braille displays before get a good experience, but also if you just want to use the arrow keys, that's fine.
So you mentioned that the Orbit Reader 20 has a built-in editor. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Right. So when the device, the Orbit Reader 20, when we originally envisioned it, it was mainly to be a reader. But we quickly realized that it would be really nice if we could take notes from, let's say, a file that we were reading. So we wanted to come up with a very simple editing feature. And what it allows you to do is you can edit the file that you're reading, or you can make a new file that's blank. Or if you're reading a file and you want to open up a notes file for that file that you're reading, you have another shortcut command that'll actually bring you into another file. And when you're done taking notes for that, you can exit and it'll bring you right back to where you were reading. So it's not really a replacement for note takers, although we've had some people that said, you know, really all I want my note taker to do is to be able to take notes. And if that's what you're looking for, this editor is a really easy, simple editor to learn and use. It doesn't have a lot of extra key presses to learn, but it definitely is a nice editor.
Well, that sounds really handy. So you talked about some of the design considerations that you used to make this device more affordable around the world and some of the elements you might have eliminated. What compromises, if any, are made in the refreshable Braille display?
Well, I don't think there's a lot of compromises there. The 20 cells of Braille actually refresh in less than a second. And the interesting thing I hear from everybody who gets to test it is, wow, that's faster than I thought it would be. And I don't know where they're getting the idea that it's going to be slow. It refreshes different. It refreshes left to right, whereas a lot of the Braille's displays just come up all at once. And again, if our cost was higher, we could use more microprocessors and actually get every cell to actuate at one shot, but it would actually cost a lot more money. So what we've done is made a really fast refresh. It is definitely a different experience, but not a bad one.
So people just have to get used to seeing the Braille appear a little bit differently, and perhaps the touch or tactile sensation is a little bit different of the display, as you mentioned before.
Right.
One concern people might have with any Braille display is the robustness of the display. You know, how it reacts to dirt, to grease, to things like that. Can you say anything about the device in those terms?
Sure. And again, part of the design of this device was to be multi-country. And part of the problems with going to parts of India where there isn't power, or maybe parts of Africa where there's some power, is you're going to run into a lot of dust and grime and things. So we wanted to make it so that the device wasn't going to have that problem. So that is one of the huge design features, is we tried to make it very indestructible. And I have accidentally, you know, flipped it off my table a few times. It gets carried to work and from work in my book bag of toys and food and everything else I carry to work. And I have yet to have a cell go bad with all I do to it. So it is definitely a very rugged kind of build.
And if the device does get damaged or some parts wear out over time, how easy is it to have the device repaired?
One of the interesting things about these displays is we created them so that they could also be easily fixed. So if, let's say, one of the dots or one of the cells actually went bad, they can actually be taken apart and fixed and put back together. And it's actually a less expensive fix.
So this sounds like a pretty modular device then. Is the device user repairable in that regard? Or does it have to be sent in for repair?
I think it's got to be sent in for repair only because there's some pretty little parts that exist internally. But the one thing we did do, because a lot of people that use the current Braille displays asked us for, was a user replaceable battery. We feel that was one of the main things that may go bad. So we made it so that the user could replace it.
Well, that's pretty handy because those batteries certainly do not last forever, even though they do last for a fairly long period, and you'd hate to have to send the unit in just to get the battery replaced.
especially when part of the target of this project is countries such as, you know, India and Africa, where, you know, getting maintenance may not be as easy. What we, I think, hope in the future is to have places that will actually do the maintenance, because this is something we can train people to maintain.
I think that people often don't have an appreciation for the amount of work that goes into developing such a device. How long has this device been under development from concept to launch?
I think that the concept started as far back as 2014 when the companies got together. 2014 is when we actually got the list together and chose who was going to design it. I mean, the idea, as you said, has been going on for years, that somebody wanted to make something more inexpensive. And it wasn't that we were trying to make the Braille display to put all other Braille displays out of business. What we're making is a Braille display that people can buy that currently can't buy it on their own.
So how did this effort come together and come to pass?
What it was large groups of people saying, we have got to do something different, make a more inexpensive device that will fill the need of all these people that need a display that they can take to the beach and actually read a book without worrying about dropping a $3,000 device in the river. I always like to say it's not the luxury device, but it sure does do everything you need it to do when you want a, you know, quick reading of Braille.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm happy with the way this was designed, because getting all these companies together, I've always said in the access world, we eat our own. And in this case, we didn't. We got together with NFB, and CNIB, RNIB, Perkins. I wish I could list them all, but they're actually on the Transforming Braille site. And it's just amazing that they all came together and had the same vision, which doesn't happen a lot in the access industry. So this is, you know, to be commended for everybody involved. And the interesting thing is, we've also had people from other companies that make Braille displays that say, hey, will you sell us the Braille cells so we can make a device too? And so, you know, you may see some more Orbit Reader cells in other devices. And like I said, maybe, you know, we might make some cells available to those maker people that want to build just something silly that has some Braille on it. It's an amazing time to live in right now, because there's just so much changing when it comes to Braille and tactile graphics and just access to the universe.
And this device, the Orbit Reader 20, is one of those devices that's making access technology available to many more people than could get it before, just by reducing the price into a more affordable range. Now for this week's final item, how to get more information about the Orbit Reader 20 and how to get one no matter where you live.
So if people want to find out more about the Orbit Reader 20 or purchase one, where would they go?
I have two places. One is, if you're looking at purchasing it, you can call the customer service line at 1-800-223-1839. And that will at least get you information about when the device will be coming out, which I can tell you will be before the end of the year. And once it releases, you'll see it announced pretty much everywhere online. Best place to check is our website at www.aph.org. But if you're interested in kind of the device, the document site is already up. So if you'd like to take a look at the documents, it's tech, and that's TECH.APH.org/OR20.
Now, you also talked about the fact that you wanted to distribute this in many parts of the world. What kinds of distribution networks will you be using, and how can people in other parts of the world find out about acquiring such a device?
I think the best way is to find your service center in the country which you're from. For instance, CNIB in Canada is one of the people that will be providing it. RNIB will also be providing it. So that's the type of people you need to ask, and they'll have more information. If they don't have information, then you should get a hold of Orbit Research, or the American Printing House, and we'll find a way to get the people in your country involved.
Do you have email addresses for Orbit Research and APH?
To get a hold of Orbit Research, which is the people who created the device for us, you can call them at 1-888-606-7248. But you can also go to their website at www.orbitresearch.com.
And the website for the American Printing House is www.aph.org.
Does the APH have a social media presence?
So yeah, APH has a Twitter account at APH for the blind, and that's APH FORTHEBLIND.
And you're on Facebook as well, right?
Yeah, we've got a Facebook account. So www.facebook.com/American Printing House.
And if people wanted to contact you directly, how can they do that?
The best way is my American Printing House email, and that would be kperry@aph.org, and that's spelled K-P-E-R-R-Y.
And you're also personally on Twitter, right?
Yes, I have a Twitter account. It's an odd one. It's at pug.perry. I use it for a blind electronics blog that I do and other accessibility things.
And again, we'll be hearing more about that in next week's episode. But as usual, if you're looking for any of the phone numbers, URLs, contact information you heard in the audio portion of this show, just go to the show notes associated with this episode at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 1649. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about building electronics projects with Ken from this week's show and his buddy Josh Mealy. Although both of them are totally blind, their lack of vision doesn't prevent them from designing and building their own electronic hardware. We'll talk with them about the Blind Arduino Project, as well as other tools that enable blind people of all ages to participate in the vibrant global culture of hardware prototyping. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-210-8094.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com, at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.